You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of the year podcast on the Radio Cafe, and I am sitting in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, with three wonderful journalists. Steve Terrell is a reporter and columnist for the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Trip Stelnicki is a reporter, and Luis Sanchez Saturno is senior photographer. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Howdy.
So we are kind of looking back at the year 2017, and it's been a long year for a lot of people, and it started news-wise in a lot of ways with the inauguration in Washington and the Women's March, which happened internationally, and we had quite a women's march here. What did it look like to you guys, and what was the significance of it to Santa Fe?
Everyone sort of after the inauguration was still in a little bit of shock, and the women's march was a bit of a cathartic release. It was just a chance to come out and see some like-minded people. If you were the kind of person who was upset by January 20th, and the events in Washington there. And it was quite a turnout here in Santa Fe. I mean, worldwide, but Santa Fe certainly had a lot of the pink hats going, and a lot of people came together for it.
Yeah, the one thing you got to remember is New Mexico, Trump lost by 9 percentage points. And that was one of his, you know, we're a small state, but that was one of his biggest losses around. And in Santa Fe, I forget what the margin was, but it was probably at least twice that. Santa Fe has not voted for a Republican since Richard Nixon in 1972. We didn't even vote for Ronald Reagan during his landslides. So, it wasn't surprising to me we got a lot of people out. Trump doesn't have a whole lot of following in this town, to be honest.
And Luis, one of the things, I mean, we can't show photographs, obviously, here on the podcast, but there's going to be kind of a special photographic edition coming out on the 1st of January, and the Women's March, that was quite a photogenic event.
Yeah, we covered the event from the ground, and we were lucky that day that we actually got a freelance drone pilot give us a photo, an aerial photo of the march, and it's really amazing to see the turnout. The aerial photo, it's a wide angle photo showing the state capitol, but you can see in the distance as far away as the plaza, and the streets are just covered with people all the way around the cathedral, the capitol, all down Old Santa Fe Trail, all the way around the plaza. It's really amazing to see. We're going to publish these pictures in the January 1st paper. Not all of them, but all the ones that we have space for. And we'll put them all in all our pics of the top photos of 2017 in the website, and a good selection in print.
And we'll link to that at radiocafe.org.
I was just going to say that underscoring the fact that so many people needed to come out. I mean, as I recall, when you see that photo, there's a ton of people, and it was a miserably cold day. It was frigid, little bit of sleet in the air, and everybody still felt like we've got to just get out there and get our steps in.
Very cold, and it had just recently snowed, too. Yeah. So.
Yeah, there were pictures that were going around the internet that day from as far away as Antarctica. So that sort of started off the year, and then we went into this very long, expensive campaign, expensive on both sides, for and against the so-called soda tax, the sugary drink tax. Tell us about that. What was it at issue there? What did that mean to Santa Fe?
Where do you begin with the soda tax? It was certainly, I don't know, Steve, you've been around and you've been in Santa Fe longer than I have, but at least as long as I've been here, it was the loudest and bitterest political fight that I've seen, at least on the local level.
Bitter, ironically.
Yeah, I guess that pun, we
not
can just
very
say
sweet.
That was intended, yeah. It was a bitter defeat, to be sure. That might have even been our headline that day. But so, yeah, if you just the overview was that it was a 2 cent per ounce proposed tax. The mayor Javier Gonzalez proposed it to. The intent was that the funds raised from that would help increase early childhood education, which is direly needed in this community. By both sides sort of acknowledged that that it was something that needed boosting. The question was how to pay for it, and you know, it a lot of folks, whether it sort of felt like a patronizing, moralizing, you know, don't drink soda, tisk tisk sort of thing that sort of turned people off. I think it was.
I was actually surprised at how big the margin was against the soda tax. We're a liberal town.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about tax and spend liberals. Well, we didn't like the tax part, I guess. But yeah, I was actually surprised. Mm. But it went down with a thud.
The Wall Street Journal ran an editorial, I think it was in the following days, about like even that liberal haven, Santa Fe, this is just proof of how soda taxes are terrible economics. If the tide has turned, that even liberal towns are starting to turn it down.
One thing that surprised me about it too was on the night, this is kind of a comical aside, on the night of the vote, Governor Susana Martinez's press team released a press release congratulating Santa Fe for rejecting taxes. And the thing is, she had not weighed in on the soda tax at all. And kind of the consensus around, at least reporters, that had she weighed in, it might have gone the other way.
Because she's so unpopular?
She's not popular in this town. So she wisely stayed out of it, but then declared victory once the tax went down.
And I think it's significant how much money was spent. And people were saying, I mean, of course, you couldn't have taken the money spent on political advertising and put it toward early childhood development. But if you could have, it would have been a whole lot of classrooms.
That's true
classrooms.
Of every political campaign. Right. You could solve a lot of problems with the money spent on ads.
Right. Mm.
And that could have also been part of the reason that, I mean, we can armchair psychologize about why it went down exactly, but I think we were flooded with advertisements, all sorts of media, and I think a lot of people were just annoyed by the tenor of the discussion around it. It felt like the backers of the tax were sort of talking down to people a little bit, to these folks who opposed it. And one thread that has emerged from it and continues is the most prominent opponent of it was City Councilor Ron Trujillo. And shortly after it went down, I believe it was even later that month, or just a couple weeks after he announced he was running for mayor, and sort of riding that momentum that he had generated from successfully opposing this proposed tax.
And then, jumping forward a little bit, the next issue that really grabbed a lot of people because it's such an emotional issue for so many people is the entrada to fiestas. And that is an issue about how we represent ourselves as a city and what our festivals mean and what our symbols mean. This is something that's kind of been brewing for quite a long time.
Yeah, the history of Santa Fe. I went to high school here, and we were told, you know, always about the peaceful reconquest. And then you read a little more into it, and it wasn't necessarily a bloodless reconquest. A lot of people, a lot of Indians were killed, and I don't know. There's kind of like I got two minds about this because the protesters have a very good point, but then again, Fiesta should be a time for coming together and celebrating and having fun. And that's how most people see Fiesta, as a fun time. And I think they've got to change the entrada, or either do away with it or alter it. And this isn't against anybody's heritage or anything, but, as the way it is, it's propaganda. Mm-hmm. And, I think we should celebrate the fact that we are a diverse city. We do have lots of cultures here. We're very welcoming for the most part. And I think it's got to change. And I thought it was ridiculous. I did a column on the fact that they charged this one lady who's one of the lead protesters with a felony.
Right.
I looked and, I studied these police tapes, and I didn't see her hitting anybody. She didn't, you shouldn't hit officers. That's right. But I didn't see it. And the fact she was charged with a felony, if the sign did hit somebody that's, you know, is like a fly swatter or something. And you shouldn't hit people with fly swatters. That's true. But
you shouldn't.
Yeah, but I thought they were overdoing it by charging this lady with a felony. And luckily those charges were dropped.
Yeah. And the whole question of how you represent yourself and how Santa Fe has represented itself. I mean, Fiesta goes back a really long way, but it was dormant for many decades, and it was kind of brought back as a tourist attraction about 100 years ago.
It's actually dormant for a couple of centuries, yeah. Or two or three. I'm not good at math. But, yeah, it was brought back, and it was, the history of the Entrada was a tourist deal. You know, so it's not like sacred script. Yeah, I think we could change it, and we'd all be happier.
Yeah, it's got to change as simple as that. I mean, it's untenable the way it is. It was just disastrous this year with the police presence sort of exacerbating from some people's view. I mean, it was really a full force, and as Steve mentioned, the arrests were a little, charges dropped. I think there are a couple different ways you could go about it. I'm not going to, you know, I don't have the answer. I don't know if any one person does, but I think it was the Archbishop and the All Pueblo Council that said they're trying to meet, or maybe they had already met, I'm not sure. But there's some steps towards a different sort of Entrada celebrate or removing entirely. It can't go on the way it has been.
And let me say something in defense of the police. I wasn't the one who was handcuffed, so I can't say it was completely painless, but I didn't see police brutality here. I thought under the circumstances, they were pretty restrained. They went overboard with the charges, but I was glad to see a lot of police there. I talked to some tourists on the plaza that day who kind of freaked out seeing police up on the roofs and stuff, but you know, there's a lot of people gathered in the plaza. It's good to have police protection there, so I'm certainly not being anti-cop when I say the charges were overzealous, but I'm glad they were there.
There were some interesting issues that were brought up about how it wasn't really public space at that time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, so that's a very weird aspect of it, is that they're granted the space, and the city police will always say, well, they can do whatever they want with it. The plaza's theirs because they've rented it.
The Fiesta Council.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think some people's argument would be that if you want to have this event, you can have it. You know, we're not saying don't have it, but the fact that it's on the historic city center is sort of a tacit endorsement of what's being depicted. And that's problematic for a lot of people, as you would.
And public space is public space. I mean, if you go downtown into the center of the city and walk on the plaza, you're in public space, whether somebody has, you know, paid for a permit fee to use it or not.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people, including the protesters, were really against, they basically created a free speech zone away from the bandstands. Or, okay, you can have your free speech over here. And a lot of people were saying, well, I thought this whole country was supposed to be a free speech zone. I covered the...
It is. It's in the Constitution.
I covered the Democratic Convention in Boston back in 2004, and they infamously had this free speech zone, like under these overpasses and highway overpasses, and you go there and there's people, you know, yelling about the CIA and stuff. It was kind of, well, this is the free speech zone. It was just like, okay, here's where we can it just seemed like there's something totalitarian about declaring free speech zones. Like, yeah, you can have your free speech, just not here.
Yeah, no, it's utterly insane. That's sort of like the Orwellian manifestation. Yeah. in our modern times. So let's move on. Another thing that's happening, and this is an ongoing issue in Santa Fe, is the former College of Santa Fe, now Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And after that, who knows? What's going on over there?
Early next year, the city's plan is to start the public input process. They approved a resolution was approved, I think, it was either late November, early December, about outlining a vision for the campus, sort of all things to all people. Like, let's explore an educational use, let's explore potential workforce housing, let's explore blah blah blah. And now they want people to actually make concrete suggestions, and they'll make more specific details about how people can do that. I think there'll be meetings. There's going to be some sort of online forum. But in short, the school will be gone in a few short months. There's only a few students left. I want to say, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, but I can't remember exactly. It was something like 90 students are left this spring semester, 9 full-time faculty, maybe a little more than a dozen part-time faculty helping them. And they requested a reduced amount of space commensurate with their smaller student body and faculty base. And the city granted that, and these are the final days.
It's really sad. Yeah, I covered a court hearing. A bunch of students are suing the company behind this private school.
Laureate.
Yeah. And I don't know anything about, you know, the merits of the case. I don't let the lawyers and the judges decide that. But I just feel really bad for these kids who put out tens of thousands of dollars to go to this school, and all of a sudden it's, well, sorry about that. We're not making a profit, and you know, we'll try to find you someplace else. You know, private colleges all over the country are suffering. And everyone was so hopeful just a few years ago when this school came in and we were going to save the College of Santa Fe, because it's a, you know, it's a nice campus right in the middle of town. And who knows what it's going to become. But it's just a sad situation.
And the resources over there are great. I mean, they've got wonderful sound studios and film studios, libraries, the Forum.
The Greer Garson Theater.
All wonderful places.
Schellenberger Tennis. I saw Public Enemy play there a few years ago. It was a great concert.
Yeah. So the public will have input into this, and next year at this time, maybe we'll be talking about what happened.
I think the end result, if I'm just going to issue us a, you know, a vague prediction, would be it'll be mixed. The city's original intent was they would have loved to have a new educational entity slide right in and take over the campus. It became clear that was not going to happen. So I think they're hoping for some sort of educational presence, whether that's as an annex of some sort of other institution. I don't know about whether it would be public or private or what it could be, but I think it's so centrally located and there is so much space there that they'd be best served to diversify the use of it. We'll see.
I suppose you get a lot of government offices will end up there.
Yeah, I think that might be exactly what happens.
Meanwhile, back to a visual story, and maybe Luis can talk about this a little bit. We've had a lot of cars driving into stores and restaurants, and some amazing images of an automobile in the middle of a clothing store, and they were all three right next to each other, sort of random. What the heck?
Well, that was really strange. The first one this year was a car drove into Jumbo Cafe.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the exact details, but I think she might have confused the brake for the accelerator.
Yeah.
It was a miracle that no one was injured. The restaurant had customers in it. Yeah, it's not every day you see a minivan inside a restaurant. but then, you know, as
I didn't order this.
Yeah, exactly. As unusual as that was, a week later, the store next to it, the clothing store Cato, had another car drive in.
Straight through the glass,
yeah, similar situation.
Nobody hurt.
And so, you know, I mean, people start joking around, oh, this corner of the shopping center is cursed. But a few months later, the same thing again.
In Office Depot,
the store right next to Cato's. And yeah, for sure, we got some great images from these accidents, and it's we don't know what's up with this corner of the store that people keep doing this.
I mean, that was the weirdest. I'll say that was the weirdest thing I wrote this year. Was I talked to a
You cover City Hall.
This was before I got a step down in weirdness by going to City Hall, because there's a group called the Storefront Safety Council, a national group that advocates about the dangers of vehicle into building crashes. They say 60 vehicles crash into buildings nationwide a day and thousands are injured.
Oh my goodness.
It's an endemic problem. It's just the way that we've set up our parking spaces near buildings. And I remember after the first one, after a woman drove into Jumbo Cafe, police say, oh, she might have mixed up the accelerator and the brake, which is one of the Storefront Safety Council's top reasons, you know, pedal confusion. Happens to all of us. What happens when that happens? You need to have a bollard or something. And so I talked to this guy, Rob Ryder, and he gave me a great quote saying something like, looking at the setup of that parking lot, that shopping center, it's not a matter of if there's a next one, it's when. And then a week later, or whatever it was, there was another one, and then another one. So, and he sent me an email, you know, linking to our article saying, I see I was proved right. So it's weird, but it's happening everywhere.
Being the old guy here at this panel, there's nothing new under the sun. About in the early 90s, I believe, may have been the late 80s, or the early 90s, guy driving a truck went right through where Smith's is now. Back then, I think it was Jewel Osco. Same thing happened. He had a heart attack,
Skaggs,
I believe.
Skaggs Alpha Beta.
Skaggs Alpha Beta, maybe. Yeah, and this guy crashed through there. They put up, they call bollards, little posts that to prevent that. But that was a big deal. I was actually out at the Santa Fe police station that day, and every cop goes rushing out of the building and goes, and sirens blaring up Sarias Road. I better get up there and see what's going on. And indeed, this guy had driven through there. No one, I think there were a couple of injuries. No one was killed. But, yeah, it can happen. But it's the very same shopping center there, College Plaza. So,
The spiritualists who are listening to this can tell us what the karma is of that particular shopping center. But I have to say, I went to lunch at Jumbo last week, and they put these sort of, they look like about 2 foot thick round, what are they called?
Bollards.
Yeah, yeah. These barriers. So anybody trying to drive in is going to have a harder time.
Well, here's a little holiday cheer on this story. One thing I really liked about this story was a lot of other restaurants pitched in and helped Jumbo get back on its feet. And that was just really encouraging.
Yeah, there was a huge community outpouring of support for that restaurant. I mean, the owner, Ahmed, I think his name is, mm-hmm. and everybody thought he's a great guy. He does great things for the community. He'd help us out. So
yeah.
Let's chip in. So that was
Yeah,
great.
They had the food truck out yep. front, and it was, man, when they were rebuilding the restaurant, that the front of that food truck was always packed.
Yeah, they were
always
gangbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a great job, and great food. All right, moving on. We have something which is ongoing, big story, continually morphing into a new story, and that is ranked choice voting, also known as instant runoff voting.
That's my third favorite story of the year. That was a joke.
It's my fourth favorite story, Steve, so we'll see how that plays out in the instant runoff. I'm rolling my eyes already.
Well, it's an interesting thing because nearly a decade ago, the voters approved ranked choice voting as part of the city charter. It hasn't yet gone into effect. There's been pressure this year to say, okay, we have the technology, let's do it. There's been opposition from some city councilors. Why? What's going on?
Well, so let me back up a second. So just in the broadest possible stroke, so this past summer was the latest time that it came before the city council saying, we've got an election coming up. This has been in our charter since 2008. The voters said we want ranked choice voting. The charter says it will be used in either the 2010 election, which was the next one, or as soon thereafter as the software to do ranked choice voting is available at a reasonable price. It's never been available for the state of New Mexico. And this summer when the city council was discussing it, the state's election software provider, the one that provides the software on the computers that run the elections, had not had that ranked choice voting module certified by Secretary of State Maggie Chalus Oliver. So the city council asking the Secretary of State's elections director, will this be ready? It was sort of vague. And the city councilors, I think wisely, said, we don't want to risk it. You know, if we don't know, we don't want to put any sort of question mark into an election. We don't want to have anyone have any questions about whether it's valid. Fast forward a couple months, it is certified. I'm skipping over a few things. I'm sure there are people who have followed every twist and turn of this and are going, he forgot. These are the broad strokes. a few groups, five citizens sued, saying now that it's been certified, it must be used. That's what's in the charter. It has to be used in the March election. A district court judge agreed, issuing a writ of mandamus saying the city has to comply with its charter, use ranked choice voting. So that's what's happening. Simultaneously, the city is also appealing that ruling to the state Supreme Court to find out whether ranked choice voting is even constitutional in the state of New Mexico. So while voting will begin in
20 minutes.
Yeah. Looking at my watch. A little over a month, absentee voting begins. It's still not exactly certain how people will be voting. City's preparing for ranked choice voting as if it is happening. It's moving forward. An educational component will be rolling out over the next few weeks.
Is the Supreme Court even going to hear it before the election?
That's the question. So it was last week that they ordered the ranked choice voting respondents to respond, the petitioners to respond to the city's petition by January 8th, I think it was, which was, you know, you can't really read too much into that, but the Supreme Court also at that point could have dismissed the city's petition out of hand and did not. So there will be a response. City attorneys have requested oral arguments. I think it's a matter of some urgency. I can't really read the tea leaves, but we could get a decision on
that. The Supreme Court's usually pretty good about responding in a timely way to issues related to voting. Yeah. So I predict if they didn't toss it out, there will be a ruling in time before the early voting starts. I'm of two minds of this, like I am many things, but I think ranked choice voting is kind of a screwy system. I tried to explain it to another reporter the other day. Tripp probably would have done a better job, but I left him more confused than he was to begin with. And I think a lot of voters are going to, you do what, you know. But the thing is, it's been in the charter for 9 years. They've had plenty of time to start educating, and it's like, you know, they just put it on the back burner until... Now they're like, we don't have enough time to educate people.
Yeah.
They've had 9 years.
I couldn't agree more.
And the vote, you know, the people spoke. I may not be for it, but the people spoke.
Mm. Like, I wouldn't have voted for it, but you got to do it, and you got to do a good job of educating people, and it's time. So that's what's happening.
And we'll probably do a podcast on it at some point soon, just for the sake of voter education. But I think the argument in favor of it and why people voted for it in the first place was that if you have, for example, six candidates running, if you do what Albuquerque does and have a runoff, almost nobody, you have very low voter turnout in the second round. And then if you don't have a runoff and you just have whoever gets the most votes, you can have, if you've got six candidates, somebody be elected with 20% of the vote or less. So that's the
idea. I agree. There should be some kind of runoff. I'm more for the traditional type of runoff.
Where you have a second election.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just expensive, and the voter turnout. That's the other side.
Yeah, that's what the ranked choice voting supporters say, is that it's the same function compressed into an algorithm that will produce a winner quicker at less cost.
I know computers never screw up, so this is bound to be flawless.
Yeah, and a representative of the software provider in the district court case the other week said that we would have a result on election night. And I noted that because we will see. There are places where that is not the case.
I smell lawsuits, though.
that's why the state Supreme Court case is happening. I mean, that's the city attorney's thing, was we want to make sure that it's constitutional before, you know, we have to challenge. We'd rather have a lawsuit before than after. But like we might, anyway, you know,
right.
It's sort of.
No, but I can see the candidate who came in first suing the candidate who came in third who actually won. You know, I can see.
Right. I mean.
Yeah. And that's what's kind of why it's an interesting issue, is that reasonable people can disagree.
Oh, yeah. And I think that to be fair to, I mean, I should just say that, you know, the people who support ranked choice voting say, and I think this is true, that it's sort of encourages a more collegial campaigning style, because you are looking to get people second place and third. You want to be, if you can't be their first choice, you want to be their second choice. So you're not going to attack candidates and risk turning off their supporters. You want to appeal to them as well. So it's sort of forcing and compelling candidates to try and reach a broader swath of people and encouraging voters to think wider too and think, okay, well, if I have to put them on a sliding scale, I feel okay about that.
Yeah, which candidate said I'd be campaigning for be everybody's number two?
Immediately, Alan Weber said, if I'm not your first, I'm your second. That's what I'm working for.
And if I was running, I'd say vote for me and no one else.
Well,
that could be the other strategy, you know,
because
if you want to cross that 50% threshold first, so if you get 50% of the first place votes, I think it was the last San Francisco mayoral election, Ed Lee, who just passed away, the incumbent mayor just picked up 56% of the vote, and the election's over. That also can happen. So the ranking is irrelevant, but.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what ranked choice voting is, basically instead of picking one candidate, you can pick first, second, third, fourth, and fifth choice. The ballot makes that very clear and easy to do. And people say, well, that's confusing. It's like, well, have you ever watched, what is it now, American Idol? And who's your first, second, and third? I barely. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on. So those are some of the big stories that have happened in Santa Fe and in New Mexico this year. And then we have kind of on more of a statewide basis, beginning of the end of the Martinez administration. We're looking forward to a new election. We're looking forward to a 2018 election, both for on a national level for our representatives, our congressional representatives, and for the governor of New Mexico. What does it mean to the state, this upcoming governor's race?
Well, it looks like Steve Pierce is going to be the only Republican candidate. And I think if anybody jumps in as a Republican now, they're going to be pretty minor. I don't think any big names are going to go in. The Democratic nomination is, I believe, Michelle Lujan Grisham's to lose at this point. She's definitely the front runner in terms of campaign contributions and endorsements and all that stuff. I'm not saying she's going to win. She could lose. She's been involved lately in a battle with Jeff Apodaca, each one slinging accusations concerning sexual harassment against each other. And like I said in the recent column, every time they do that, Steve Pierce smiles. So it'll be an interesting race. There's going to be at least two new congressmen, not here in our district. Ben Ray Lujan, does he have any opposition yet? If so, this is a very Democratic district. He doesn't have any Democratic opposition, so you know it's probably pretty safe to say he's pretty safe. But there's going to be a new congressman in the District 1, which is the Albuquerque area, because Michelle Lujan Grisham currently represents that. So there'll definitely be a new one there. There'll definitely be a new one down south in the 2nd District because Steve Pierce is running for governor.
So we've got two congresspeople, presumably, running against each other for governor, which is interesting.
Right, right. It reminds me of the last time Pierce ran. He ran for U.S. Senate, and that was the year he ran against Tom Udall. That's when Domenici retired. I love races like this because they both have been in Congress, Steve Pierce longer, but they've both voted on the same things the last several years. So it's easy to say, here's where Pierce stands, here's where Michelle Lujan Grisham stands.
Yeah.
So if she is a nominee, it'll be very easy to compare and contrast their records, and makes it easy for reporters because we can just look up the votes. Their rhetoric, you know, on a particular thing doesn't really matter that much because they have actual votes to back up what they say.
Right. So that's coming up, and here we are in Santa Fe, almost the end of the year, looking back. As reporters looking at this city and this county and this region, what do you think that citizens are most concerned about? What are the big problems that people are really thinking and talking about?
People need more money, and so is the economy and education. Those are always going to be the big ones.
Jobs and education. And you, Tripp, wrote an article, I think it was in the end of August, about there was a poll that kind of gave the sense that we are a bit restless as a community. Some people think this community is going in the wrong direction. Some people think it's going in the right direction. And there's a real demographic difference among who thinks we're doing well and who doesn't.
Yeah. I think it was sort of broadly that folks, the main issue for folks was the economy, jobs, farther behind that, education. But the interesting part of it, as you mentioned, was that sort of the view of whether the city was headed in the right direction or on the right track was sharply divided based on where you lived and your ethnicity. The north and east sides of town, traditionally more Anglo, were sort of more of the view that the city's okay. You know, it wasn't a huge margin, but more people were saying the city's heading on the right track. Far south, southwest side, and just on the south side in general, where the city's growing a lot more, but it's sort of where the more it's more Hispanic, feels almost precisely diametrically opposite, that the city is headed on the wrong track. And I think next year, I would hope that the elections for citywide office and also the city council districts would sort of be a forum where these ideas can be discussed and hashed out and sort of try and find a consensus. No matter where you live in town, I think to sort of answer the original question that you know, what are people focusing? I think housing is the main thing for a lot of people. It's not the most important overall, maybe, but I think for a lot of folks, it's just this is a tough place to find. This is a tough town to find a place to live affordably.
And both home ownership and renting.
Overall, yeah, and it's a tight market, and it's that's sort of the knot that's at the center of all these economic issues. No matter where you come down on them, people have got to have a place to live.
How's tourism?
I think it's doing fine, isn't it?
I live here. I don't know.
I had my, you know, one problem is always in Santa Fe is all our kids always move away, and both my kids moved to Texas, and my daughter and my grandkids came to town recently, and I was like a tourist for 3 or 4 days. We went to every museum in town, all this great tourist stuff. I really enjoyed it, and most of the facilities I went to, from Meow Wolf to the Folk Art Museum, even the Bug Museum in DeVargas Mall.
Yeah.
That's a cool place. You know, they seem bustling, especially the big museums.
Yeah.
And Meow Wolf was downright crowded. I think tourism doing okay. Of course, if you talk to shop owners and gallery keepers, they'll probably say, we need more. But I've seen it worse.
Yeah. My whole family's visiting right now for Christmas, and they're having a great time, I think. You know, they went up to Bandelier yesterday. You know, it's not, 'cause that's the thing. It's not just being in Santa Fe. It's that Santa Fe is sort of the gateway to northern New Mexico, right? So there's so much to do, and I think one interesting part of what's happening in the tourism sphere right now is the airport is being marketed more as sort of an alternative to the Sunport, and they're trying to draw more business to the Santa Fe airport. Just there's this Fly Santa Fe campaign that's a bunch of local chambers of commerce and different, not just Santa Fe, but it's towns in northern New Mexico that are sort of trying to make Santa Fe that launching pad to the rest of the...
I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, I've had a number of relatives visit, and they've all flown into Santa Fe. And I have to say, it's very convenient. Yeah, it doesn't cost any, like, if you're coming from the East Coast, it really doesn't cost any more to fly into Santa Fe if you do it right.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, ladies and gentlemen, anything else that you want to talk about looking back at 2017 before we go?
A lot of great pictures from 2017.
And you're going to have, so on January 1st, both in the paper edition and the web edition, there's going to be a kind of looking back on the year in pictures.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to this tourism thing that you guys were just talking about, a lot of these pictures are about the tourism. You know, the Balloon Fiesta, there's a lot of good pictures that always come out of that. It's, you can't take a bad picture over there. The pilgrimage to Chimayo, a lot of people come through here to partake in the Easter pilgrimage.
Yeah.
God, there's so many things. Zozobra also brings out a lot of people, and it's great pictures come out of that event. Gabriela Campos, our new photographer, she got some great pictures this year.
Oh, she did. Her Zozobra shots. This is the first Zozobra I'd been to in a long time. I had some friends from out of town come in, and it's a great event.
And it's also kind of an encouragement that we can create new traditions, because that was invented by an artist. We're creative people. If and when the Entrada goes, something else amazing will take its place.
Yeah, Zozobra.
Another Zozobra. 2.0.
Son of Zozobra. Daughter of Zozobra. Well, I want to thank you all, Steve Terrell, Trip Stelnicki, and Luis Sanchez Saturno of the Santa Fe New Mexican. This has been our look back on 2017. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer sales, repair, and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.